Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Winston and the Windsors: How Churchill Shaped a Royal Dynasty, by Andrew Morton, explores the long, complicated relationship between Winston Churchill and Britain's modern monarchy. Rather than treating Churchill only as a wartime prime minister, the book frames him as a persistent royal insider who understood the power of symbolism, public mood, and constitutional limits. Morton, known for narrative-driven royal history, follows how Churchill's personal loyalties, political calculations, and instinct for national mythmaking intersected with the House of Windsor across decades of upheaval. The story moves through abdication drama, wartime leadership, post-war reinvention, and the monarchy's shift from private institution to carefully managed public brand. By tracing Churchill's influence on royal image, policy council, and crisis management, the book highlights how a single statesman could help stabilize a dynasty, while also protecting his own vision of Britain. It is a study of personalities and institutions, and of how power is exercised when tradition must survive modernity. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a statesman as royal strategist, a central theme is Churchill's unique position at the boundary between elected government and hereditary monarchy. The book emphasizes how he treated the crown not as an abstract symbol, but as a living institution that needed active stewardship to remain legitimate. In a constitutional system, the monarch's role is limited, yet the monarchy's presence shapes national identity and political continuity. Churchill's skill lay in understanding both dimensions at once. He could speak the language of history and ceremony, while also reading parliamentary realities and popular sentiment. Morton presents Churchill as someone who advised, protected, and occasionally managed royal interests, especially when the monarchy faced public skepticism or internal missteps. This topic also includes the idea that Churchill believed the monarchy could anchor Britain through disorienting change, provided it adapted carefully. His approach blends personal loyalty with political realism. He valued the crown, but he also recognized that survival required discipline, messaging, and prudent restraint. The result is an account of influence exercised through counsel, relationships, and timing rather than formal authority. It shows how soft power can be decisive when the institution at stake depends on public consent. Secondly, crisis and continuity in the abdication era. The abdication crisis reshaped the House of Windsor and forced Britain to confront the limits of personal desire within a symbolic office. The book situates Churchill amid this turbulent moment to show how leadership outside the palace can affect outcomes inside it. Morton's narrative underscores that abdication was not only a family drama, but also a constitutional emergency with implications for national stability, international credibility, and public morale. Within that pressure, Churchill's instincts for continuity and tradition come to the foreground. He is portrayed as sensitive to how sudden change at the top could fracture confidence in institutions already strained by economic and geopolitical uncertainty. This topic examines how reputations are made and broken during crisis, and how the monarchy had to transition from one identity to another quickly. The new royal settlement demanded a different kind of public performance and a different relationship with government. Churchill's role, as depicted by Morton, reflects the larger question of who steps in to stabilize the narrative when the crown is threatened. The episode becomes a template for later royal crises: manage the constitutional stakes, control the public story, and restore a sense of duty as the monarchy's core justification. Thirdly, war, symbolism, and the monarchy's public role. Churchill's wartime leadership is inseparable from the monarchy's ability to serve as a unifying emblem. The book highlights how the crown's visibility during national emergency mattered, and how Churchill understood the value of coordinated symbolism. In wartime Britain, morale was a strategic resource, and the monarchy's presence could help translate hardship into shared purpose. Morton explores the interplay between political leadership and royal image, showing that the effectiveness of both depended on disciplined messaging and credible displays of courage and service. This topic focuses on how the monarchy's public engagements, restraint, and steady demeanor complemented Churchill's rhetoric and determination. It also addresses the delicate balance required the monarch must appear above politics while still embodying national resolve. Churchill's awareness of public psychology meant he was attentive to the optics of unity, continuity, and calm. The book uses this period to illustrate how modern monarchy evolves during crisis, shifting from distant formality to a more approachable but carefully curated presence. Wartime becomes a proving ground where monarchy and government, while constitutionally distinct, reinforce each other in the public mind, helping the dynasty secure deeper emotional legitimacy for the post-war world. Fourthly, private bonds and political calculations. Another important thread is the human dimension: friendships, loyalties, grievances, and mutual dependence between Churchill and the Windsors. Morton treats these relationships as consequential, because personal access can shape advice given, trust earned, and warnings heeded. Yet the book also stresses that warmth and loyalty coexist with calculation. Churchill could admire the monarchy while still assessing how royal choices would land with voters, newspapers, and parliament. This topic examines how private conversations and perceptions might influence public outcomes, even in a system designed to keep the sovereign politically neutral. It also considers how royal can become entangled in political narratives despite constitutional boundaries, making discreet counsel from experienced figures especially valuable. Morton's approach suggests that Churchill acted as both confidant and guardian of institutional interests, mindful of how individual behavior can threaten the wider brand of the dynasty. The theme extends to the idea that the monarchy and a senior statesman can use one another. The crown lends continuity and prestige, while the politician provides strategy, protection, and an understanding of shifting public expectations. The result is a nuanced portrait of power that is relational, informal, and sometimes ambiguous, rather than purely legal or ceremonial. Lastly, modernizing the dynasty without breaking tradition. The book frames the House of Windsor's survival as a continuous modernization project, and it positions Churchill as an influence on how that modernization was paced and presented. In the 20th century, mass media, democratic attitudes, and social change made old forms of deference less automatic. Morton emphasizes that a royal dynasty could no longer rely on tradition alone. It had to earn relevance through service, visibility, and carefully managed dignity. This topic focuses on the tension between adapting to the modern world and preserving the aura that makes monarchy distinct. Churchill's contribution, as portrayed, lies in his instinct for national storytelling. He understood that institutions survive when their narrative aligns with the public's sense of identity and purpose. That meant choosing what to reveal, what to emphasize, and what to keep private. The theme also touches on reputation management before the age of constant scrutiny, where a single misjudgment could reshape public opinion. By exploring decisions around public engagement, image, and constitutional restraint, Morton shows modernization as a strategic process rather than a sudden reform. The broader takeaway is that durable institutions evolve by interpreting tradition anew and by learning to communicate stability in language that each generation can accept. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who enjoy modern British history, royal biography, and the behind-the-scenes mechanics of constitutional monarchy. If you are interested in how public institutions survive scandal, war, and social change, Morton's focus on Churchill's relationship with the Windsors offers a clear case study in reputation, legitimacy, and strategic leadership. It can benefit a reader's life by sharpening how you think about influence without formal authority, the importance of narrative in public trust, and the way personal relationships can shape institutional outcomes. Those lessons translate beyond monarchy into politics, business, and community leadership, where credibility and symbolism often matter as much as policy. Compared with similar royal books that concentrate mainly on family drama or ceremonial detail, this one adds a distinct angle by centering a major political figure as an active force in shaping the dynasty's public trajectory. That framing creates a richer understanding of both Churchill and the modern crown, and it gives the story broader stakes than gossip or nostalgia. For readers looking for a compelling, historically grounded look at power and image, it is a worthwhile purchase. If you would like to support Andrew Morton, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.